the brain. It is a thing of electricity. It appears to be contained, but it's nonlinear in thinking and function. One can live in the future through dreams. One can live in the past through memory. But the present is the most interesting of all, because we are connected with an infinite number of potential actions and movements. Every choice playing out all around us, just beyond our perception. And if we have the key to unlock the pathways between these diverse perceptions, then we can travel between them. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 4, The Runaway.
You're going to need to get closer. You might need a chair without arms. Or like, creep in.
I'm very good at creeping.
Oh. All right, so here's a question, and you guys can answer it at the same time.
Okay.
You can answer it together.
Okay.
That's Richard and Talia Rawls, a married couple who lives in Barton, New Hampshire. They were childhood next-door neighbors turned high school sweethearts. They've been married for 15 years.
He was just real cute about the way he talked. Well, he had a special name for his fort, the one that he spent a long time on, the one he, you know, made under his bed. He called it the Sanctuary.
Ah, yes, the Sanctuary.
They were brought together many years earlier as kids, when Talia's older brother disappeared. Young John Herman was never found.
Hello. My name is Ricky Rawls. I live in Barton, New Hampshire, for my whole life. I remember little Johnny only vaguely. We were best friends as kids growing up, but as you know, he disappeared when he was 10 years old.
He was 9.
Sorry, 9 years old. It's been a while.
From the newspaper clippings I found in the Barton Public Library, it appears that people thought that the 9-year-old had been kidnapped. Of course, I knew differently. I knew he ran away. I also knew that he probably left a note to his good friend, Ricky.
Yeah, I was 7 years old when my brother disappeared. My parents just couldn't deal. My father still goes hiking in the woods. He doesn't say so, but I know he's looking even 30 years later. I don't know what he expects to find out there.
A body, perhaps?
Ricky, please.
So you guys didn't think he was kidnapped?
I don't know.
We think he just slipped out in the middle of the night.
I think he just ran away.
I told the couple that I was an amateur journalist doing an audio project on missing persons cases.
So you guys don't think he was kidnapped?
I don't know.
We think he just slipped out in the middle of the night.
I think he just ran away.
I had been living in their Barton for about 3 days. I was more than just new to town. I was new to their universe.
Talia, if this is too personal a question, just let me know. Beyond your mom and dad, you and Richard here were probably the closest to John growing up. So what do you think his future could have been?
Of course I knew that this version of me was probably long dead, having succumbed to the elements.
I looked up to him. He was my big brother to me. He could have done anything.
I think he could have been a spy.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. I just think he could have been a spy or in the CIA or something.
I too ran away when I was 9. But I wrote Ricky a note, which in my world inspired him to tell on me. He told my parents. He got Police Chief Tawkins involved. They caught me the next morning before I disappeared into the woods for good. I guess I can say that Ricky Rawls saved my life. Had my good friend Ricky Rawls kept quiet this time? Instead of telling on this runaway, notifying his parents and the police, it appeared he kept the boyhood secret. When I sat down with them both, I gave Ricky and Talia a false name. Neither recognized me. The John Herman they knew had disappeared 30 years earlier. my own parents wouldn't have recognized me. It took everything in my power not to corner Ricky and ask him about that note. Was he still harboring the secret? Looking him in the eye, I could only assume that this Ricky Rawls, who ended up marrying my sister, would take my secret to his grave. What a choice to have to live with. It was during this, my fourth journey through the Hidden Veil, when I decided to create the system. Just as Samuel Johnson created a system in 18th century London to receive different versions of Sir Joshua Reynolds from different worlds, I felt the need to create a system for myself. It was a system to keep track of all the John Hermans who were crossing over. You see, when I decided to leave, for reasons that you will soon learn, I knew that in the corridors of infinite possibilities, other John Hermans would make the same exact decision, triggering a transdimensional migration. Sounds like science fiction, right? When you live it, it's somehow more subtle, beautiful, like the fractal essence of the natural world or petals on a blooming flower. But I must admit, it is also terrifying. History had proven over and over again that duplicity of personal identity bred violence. So, ultimately, I decided that we, the many versions of me, John Herman, needed a system. I decided upon a shared secret journal that could be kept in the basement of the Barton Public Library. I imagined it could be like a trail journal, like the ones described by my old physics teacher, Zachary Pratt. Along the Appalachian Trail, there are places to stay. Shelters, huts, if you will. These places feature journals that travelers can sign like a guest book. The journals offer tips and general observations to share with the others passing through. Of course, when I went down to the library basement to hide the journal, I discovered that I had already done it. A different me had already placed a journal in the exact location that I thought that I alone had uniquely decided upon. In the journal I found there, I immediately learned that there were already three Reynolds running around Barton, as in three other John Hermans. Three times I have bared witness to the scenario in which the John Herman of a particular world is not alive. You just heard from one of those situations. Twice, John Herman died when he was a child, or at least he ran away, and I'm guessing he died out in the woods when he was 9 years old. One time, he died in a car crash the summer between high school and when he would have gone to college. Twice I have discovered through the journal that the resident John Herman lives right in Barton. This is all important information to know, because I didn't want to unexpectedly bump into myself. That happened once. I recorded it. What would you do if you happened upon a person who looked and sounded, maybe even dressed, exactly like you? I had the benefit of being aware of the possibility. I was Reynolds. But the John Herman who found me in the basement of the Barton Public Library was naively following his investigation. He was never friends with Alistair Glamis like I was. He didn't know about Eureka, Hieronymus Bosch, Johnson, Reynolds. He was unexpectedly confronted with a nightmarish vision, his doppelganger, me. So what did he do? Did he run? No. He chased me. Thank you.
play a game called Good Cop, Bad Cop. You can be the good, I will be the bad. Let's find the lovers who broke our hearts. Ask them how they sleep now, where
we ran right out of the library. We ran and ran. I didn't know what was in his head. He had a crazed look in his eye. So I just kept running. At times, at exact times, we stopped to catch our breath, and then we were running again. Finally, we both collapsed, reaching our physical limits at the same moment, only yards away from each other.
Please, don't hurt me. We can talk this out.
That was me.
Who are you?
That was him.
Two owls in the fountain, one white giraffe. What are you talking about?
You really don't understand, okay?
Okay, I get it. This is very confusing for you. I am you. I know this is hard to understand, but I am you. We're the same person, sort of.
We talked it out through our gasps for air. And yeah, it took a while. This particular John Herman was a sad case. I'm only judging because he didn't have the one thing that, in my opinion, makes a solid John Herman. He didn't have Carol. He had never attended his 10th high school reunion, so they had never reconnected. As the sun set, this John Herman and I sat in the grass together. We shared our lives, deconstructed the similarities, debated the choices we made in life. Then he became very quiet. At first, I didn't know if he had cracked completely. Would I have? He wanted to talk more. He wanted to know everything. I agreed. Eventually, he offered to drive me back to his place. We talked the whole time. He asked about Talia, my Talia. He asked about his parents in my world. I told him about my wife. He seemed tickled to learn that I had married Carol Minkowski. He asked how I did it. How I arrived in his world. What the trick was. He wanted to know exactly how I passed beyond the mirror. I told him that it was very dangerous information. I told him that he was shielded by his ignorance. He immediately disagreed. He knew. He sensed the dragon was awake. I told him that not only would he be lost forever in the halls of infinite potential, but that there were physical consequences as well. There was no way back. He listened to everything I said, but he was still desperate to know more. I told him that I got the idea to hide a journal in the basement of the Barton Public Library because my sister, my Talia, and I once hid an empty book there as a joke. He looked confused by the story. He said that he and his sister had never even had library cards. While I sat there, he called his sister, his Talia, and questioned her about it. She, of course, had no idea what he was talking about. When he hung up the phone, John Herman asked me, pointedly, about the physical consequences I had alluded to. So I told him. I explained that I was blind in one eye. Something to do with the unique conditions of perception in vastly different but similar environments, a way for the brain to compensate for the disorder brought on by the trauma of stepping into other worlds. what happened to that John Herman who confronted and chased me from the Barton Public Library, the one that took me to his apartment and interrogated me for hours about the secrets of the universe. He disappeared. We were sitting in the living room of his apartment. It was the first time I saw another person do it. Travel, I mean. His disappearance was sudden, mid-conversation, mid-sentence. A living, breathing human being, John Herman, was sitting across from me, and then he was gone. And I was alone in his apartment. Everything was so quiet, so eerily quiet after he disappeared. I looked around. He appeared to have taken the clothes on his back and his handheld audio recorder. Everything else was left behind. Even though I experienced the same sensation many times myself, it gave me the chills to watch it as an observer. I walked out of his house and hitchhiked back to Barton. I stuck around in his world for a few weeks more, but eventually I left too. I was around long enough to hear his Talia take over his audio project. There was a statewide search for John Herman, so I knew I had to leave. If you want to hear his full story, in his own words, leading all the way up until his disappearance, then you can simply re-listen to the second series of the Disappearance Podcast.
It hurts in a way that cannot be described. It isn't emotional, it isn't physical. To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour.
That was Alistair Glamis. That's a quote from William Blake, the 18th century poet, a student of the Royal Academy of Arts, an organization created 30 years earlier by Sir Joshua Reynolds and William Chambers, the guy who designed a gigantic stone pineapple. Explaining the pain, that's as good as you're gonna get. I first felt that pain over a year ago, and I still feel it. But honestly, the pain didn't compare to the pain I felt when I realized that I had to disappear. I had to disappear. I had to disappear in order to protect Carol. I will go into the further details of my disappearance during my next episode. But for now, I will tell you that there was an unexpected figure who stepped from the shadows. And he caused me to run. For me, he represents the dragon, the disorder, the potential for violence and madness I had created by my lifelong association with Alistair Glamis, a friendship I could not escape, a friendship that could literally alter reality. Where was I going when I was 9 years old? What did I expect to find in those dark woods? But what about you? What is going to convince you to stop? Do you need to know the history? Well, now you know it. What if I played a recording of a conversation between me and you that you never remember having? Would you believe me then? Until next time, thank you to John and Danielle Herman for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Prom Queen, Ben von Wildenhaus, Ross Boyd, and Rudy Sims for providing the music. This project is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk in 2 weeks.
Partners in Crime Media.